Welcome to the Mad Tech Podcast from ExchangeWire, bringing you the latest news and views from the world of ad tech, media, and marketing.
Hello, and welcome to the Mad Tech Podcast. I'm Grainne Reid, Head of Marketing at ExchangeWire, and your host for today. I'm delighted to be joined by John Still, Head of Content. How are you, John?
I'm good. Thank you very much, as always, for having me.
And alongside John, we've got Lindsay Rowntree, COO at ExchangeWire. How are you, Lindsay?
I'm very well, thank you.
Good, amazing.
Lovely to be here.
Great to have you. This week, we're going to be breaking down three major moves reshaping the future of AI, consumer tech, and media power dynamics. Google's new protocol for AI-driven commerce, Apple's decision to tap Google's Gemini for its upcoming AI-powered Siri, as well as Paramount's lawsuit following Warner Brothers Discovery's rejection of its latest offer. First up, Google has announced a new standard, the Universal Commerce Protocol, or the UCP, for AI agent-based shopping, developed with major names in retail including Shopify, Wayfair, and Target. It lets agents work across different parts of the customer buying process, from discovery to post-purchase support. The standard's objective is to facilitate these different parts of the process, removing the need for connections with different agents.
Lindsay, what does this mean for the industry?
Yeah. What does it mean? What does it mean at all? What do those words mean is really the question, I think. My brain isn't braining much today, so it took me a while to get my head around it. But I think that how I understand, and actually I would love, message me someone to explain it, because I'd love, it'd be great if you came to do a trade talk to explain it to us and kind of map it out on a whiteboard. But from how I understand it, is that this is a bit like sort of the open RTB of display advertising, whereby Google, and maybe we should be concerned that Google are the ones doing this, but Google have created a standard, so it's an open standard, whereby all of the, basically a transaction can be fully completed by an agentic AI. So it won't necessarily be seen much by us as consumers, but everything that it'll be underpinned by this new standard that means that if you're an advertiser with a really strong product graph, I could go in and I could run a search and for the example given in the article was a rug and this made John laugh, a high traffic dining room, because that's how we always describe our rooms, as high traffic and low traffic. A rug for a high traffic dining room, kind of how that transaction be completed. And it now means that I could do that, for example, on Google search using the AI overview. And I could then potentially get that all completed in one fell swoop without having to go through and even click through to a website. The whole thing could be done, integrated with Google Pay, and they're using Shopify, Wayfair, different things as well. But ultimately, it's been done by Google. Now, this is very interesting for a number of reasons. Firstly, I went down a bit of a rabbit hole here. So I don't know if anyone's looked at search engine results page on Google for a while, but it is a freaking mess. And I searched rug for dining room. And what came up first of all was product listings at the very top, sponsored product listings. Below that, the AI overview, alongside of which there are some results that have been pulled out that aren't sponsored. But you have to look really hard to see what is sponsored and isn't sponsored. Nothing was clear to me. And then below that was some actual kind of organic results. Then one random paid search ad. Then below that, some more sponsored product listings. And then below that, some more organic search results. And I was just like, what are Google doing at the moment? Are they hedging their bets, trying to kind of work out as they try to leverage the AI overview? They also need to make sure that as much rounded is sponsored as possible, because that is a massive source of revenue for them. So they want to use AI overview. It's not sponsored yet, but that's the way it's going. So they still have to obviously put sponsored things on the page to get some money out of it. Anyway, very complicated. But in doing all this, it feels like, you know, the big thing for advertisers is that if I'm an advertiser, I need to get my product graph sorted. I need to make sure that all my products are so clearly listed, because if me as a consumer, I'm searching something, if the advertiser that I could potentially buy from hasn't got his product graph up to scratch and kind of really clear, the agent involved, be it Google, be it whatever, is not going to call upon my products and bring them as an option for me to be able to go and complete the purchase of. So I've got to be on top of that 100%. And also within that, if I'm an advertiser, you know, what does advertising mean anymore? Google owns the entire loop by the looks of things. So Google now owns the entire things, anything attribution related, fraud related, from a commerce perspective, it all sort of sits as Google. If I'm advertising, oh, and Google also, they're trialing a new product called Direct Offers. So if it consents that I am at the end, I am nearing the end of my decision-making and I want to buy a product, it will, an advertiser can plug in an offer like free shipping or 20% off that will, I think the intention is it will appear in Google's AI search and eventually ultimately Gemini. I don't really know what sense I'm making, and it's not that clear in my head, but I think that what we're saying is Google's owning the entire thing, and they will now be starting to implement the ability to advertise alongside these results. So if I'm an advertiser, that's where I've got to get my, I've got to put my money in that as well as pay search, as well as sponsored product listings. I need to add this into my roster of where my money goes to ensure that I am part of it. And also, I'm no longer targeting a human. I'm targeting an AI. I'm targeting an agent. And so what does that mean for what I'm looking for? Does the agent, does the mechanics of what the agent's looking for, is that the same as what a human looks for? No. But does it, it depends on a human search query, which will no longer be keywords. It will be, I'm looking for a colourful, fun rug for my high-traffic dining room. I like to host dinner parties and want it to be easy to clean. And that's what I need to now consider, if that's what's being searched for. And then the agent is going to be using that information to come up with a bunch of products. I've got to be front of mind in that. So the way that I think as an advertiser has to be completely different. But don't worry, because soon the agent will do that anyway. So the agent's talking to the agent, so actually the human is irrelevant in the whole process, it feels like. Anyway, I find it quite confusing, but interesting. And I also wonder what will mean for regulators, because while it is open, it's just going to be open source, do regulators trust that Google are the ones leading on this open source, given everything that's gone on last year?
And that's a very big question.
Sorry, yeah, it's huge, right? Like, it is huge. Or maybe it's not, because like Google haven't really got slapped on the wrist that much, so maybe it's fine.
Keep doing it.
Yeah. But anyway, sorry, that was, I don't know what sense that made.
Helpful.
So over to you guys.
No, I thought it made a lot of sense. And also highlights just how many questions are left outstanding in this. Like, we're at the beginning of this whole process of the agentic revolution, evolution, whatever you want to call it. But yeah, are we just watching us recreate the whole Google display model again in AI? Are they just owning it from start to finish, or only making all the same mistakes again, making an unworkable, unusable experience that's shit for the consumer? I was reading the write-up of this, and Shopify are involved, and the quote from Toby Ludka really got me. This is one of the really exciting parts about agentic. It's really good at finding people who have specific interests and finding the product that's just perfect for them. Like, I would have never searched for this product, but somehow it found me right on the other side. This kind of serendipity is where the best of commerce happens.
Don't know about that.
That's not serendipity, that's inception.
Yeah.
It's like,
true.
It's wild.
So true.
It's like, I don't want this product, I'm going to buy it because the agent told me to. And it's the worst of commerce.
Yeah.
And the worst of advertising. It is not useful, it is forceful. And so I don't like that, but that's just a one-off quote from it. In terms of the standards and protocols, my obviously massive question mark is over Google leading the way on this, like you said. It's you know, it's coming. The agentic AI shopping is certainly going to be part of the future. And we've said a number of times over the last few weeks and months about how this is an opportunity to harness something properly for the benefit of the consumer, for not being as in your face, but more helpful. And it's sort of just watching that being trampled all over.
But it'll be perceived to be more helpful, like, which is all for our benefit, right? But it, and also, I think what's interesting, I'm sorry to cut in, but I think that it compresses what we understand to be the purchase funnel. Because, and there's been long arguments for many, many years that the funnel is completely outdated. And I agree with that. I think the funnel is outdated, but many people still use it. There are also other versions of it, like the consumer decision journey, that kind of look at the journey rather than a kind of you being in a bucket and kind of the top of it, where you're kind of like maybe, you know, could be potentially interested versus kind of I'm now actually actively searching for this versus I'm now ready to make a purchase. It kind of compresses the middle of it, I feel like. And so you're either, you know, potentially like a broadcast ad. This could be relevant to most of the population. Let's throw it at them. to I know exactly what I want and I'm going to use my words to be able to comfortably search what I want, and then they're going to use my words to give me the product exactly. There's the middle bit of the research phase has been compressed completely because it can be done in one fell swoop from me just typing in a long details query and it producing the perfect list of things that I want. Like, gone are the days of me kind of going to maybe different research sites, like going to Which or going to different review sites. Gone are me going to this shop versus this shop versus this shop, if it can all be done in one place. So everything that we know about everything, all the research we've done about how a consumer makes a purchase, how any of us sitting here now would think about purchasing an item, it will completely change it.
I still think I would want to go and research and have a look. It depends on the value of the item.
Yeah.
But I still want to go and compare. I'm not going to click on the first thing that's suggested to me to then purchase it and be like, okay, cool.
And that's like, personally, cling to that, G. Like, do that, because that's, you know, keep going and I'll be the same. But it's, yes, I'd feel like it's, you know, it's like going on your chosen AI LLM search engine and saying, hi, I'm looking for some running shoes, size 11. Here's my height. Here's, you know, just giving them the details. And you'll come back and say, of course you do, you legend. You want your, you're super running.
You legend. You are amazing.
Go to this website and buy these trainers right away.
That's not slow. That's just measured. And it will give me the right pair for me. And I'll be like, oh, cool. I'll have those then. And my concern is that this is just leading to another Google situation where the one who pays the highest for the advert will get the business, and it creates that lack of choice. It's just homogenizing the buying process. I think you're right. It's cutting out the steps. It's not what we knew of in terms of research anymore, but it's now a new level of that kind of that commerce and that buying funnel.
Does that then mean that we will exist in a world that is basically Google versus Amazon?
Yeah, completely.
Yeah. And the other LLMs, but ultimately Google.
Yeah.
I feel like Google have taken a massive step here to own the entire commerce flywheel, if you like, because they're owning every part of it, really.
Yeah.
Attribution, everything.
And no, that's skipping
the... No, and the only other company that exists that does that is Amazon.
Amazon, yeah.
And so would I, if I'm searching something mundane, would I still go to Amazon? Would I go to Amazon for my mundane stuff? Like, we just bought like 50,000 tea bags for the office. I'd go to that one.
Well,
go
to exactly what you're looking.
You know what I'm looking for. So you go to Amazon for that. If I'm looking for something more complex, where I might look to Amazon to see products, like, I don't know, I literally can't. I'm sorry, a camera. Where I now go to Google and be like, okay, Google, what help me? I don't. I'm so sorry if I set off any anyone's bones there. Help me with trying to find this camera. I'm on a camera that can do this. And it'll go, yeah, great, here you go. Are you looking to get into photography? Give me some more thoughts what you were doing. And you'll go, actually, yeah, if I want it for this, this and this. And it'll go, right, here you go. And if I'm not, if me as an advertiser, I'm not present and correct with a completely updated site, I wonder as well kind of what other platform, what other tools will feed into this. You've got, you know, things I'm thinking about in the past, I used to do paid search. Companies like Golden Feed that kind of find all the feed-based stuff that plug into sponsored listings for Google. If all those companies have an opportunity here, I suppose, could have been the new agentic world, what that looks like as well. There's lots of opportunities for different companies to plug into this, but ultimately Google still owns it.
Yeah, and it becomes about gaining their rankings. It becomes about the same things it's always been. We're just recreating the same thing again.
Yeah.
Only with a few less layers.
With a few less layers, yes. Yeah.
I'm going to move us on to our second story, which, guess what? It's by Google.
Oh!
Apple has struck a deal with Google, which we'll see is using Google's Gemini models to power its AI features, including a major Siri update expected sometime this year. The company will also lean on Google's Gemini models and cloud technology for its future foundational models. In a statement, Apple said that Google's technology provided the most capable foundation for its model. John, how do you think this deal will impact the ecosystem?
I mean, it's, first of all, a hugely complex relationship between Google and Apple. Because they are absolutely direct competitors in a lot of senses. They're also hand-in-hand partners in a lot of others. I don't want to say, have they learned nothing from the rulings of last year? because you could kind of, you know, one of the takeaway from the rulings could be that they have it and they don't need to, because it was stated that Google continue paying Apple for preferential placement on there as a search engine on iPhones. And I suppose this is just the next level of that. It's again, Google getting into that iPhone ecosystem with their own AI. It's an odd one, but at the same time, completely and utterly expected that that would be the outcome for Apple, who have lagged a bit behind in their AI offering. You know, they haven't made the same forward steps as other companies have, and picking Google, who have all the power in the world on their side in terms of AI, it seems like a natural fit to power Apple stuff. I'm interested in whether it's like a white label situation, whether it is Apple using Google's tech and developing on top of it, how prevalent Google will be in that offering. But yeah, it's another big power marriage.
Lindsay, what are your thoughts, and what do you think will happen to the existing partnership with OpenAI? And do you think it's realistic that Apple will be able to use both?
This is my first question, because I have an iPhone, and I was like, well, hang on a second. If I'm doing a search for Siri, it will often ask me if I want to open it in ChatGPT and continue the conversation there. And so I was like, well, hang on, haven't even got a relationship with OpenAI? What's going on? And so I looked into it, and it looks like they're going to try and keep both relationships. I don't know how well that's going to go, because I think if I was OpenAI, I wouldn't want to be part of that. I'd be like, well, why can't you had the chance to use us for this? And so they're going to use Gemini for sort of the back end and kind of the real kind of functional aspects of Siri to power Siri's capabilities. But then for any, as it was termed, like weirder queries, that's when ChatGPT will kick in. Because it is like anything Siri can't answer herself, and that is quite a lot because Siri's pretty dumb. It will ask to extend the question to ChatGPT instead. I just don't see how or why the two of them work together. I don't see why OpenAI would want to be part of that. And I think that the Google Apple relationship, as you said, John, is a complicated one. And I think that it's all well and good having that relationship when it comes to search. Obviously, everyone knows that that Apple's Safari search function is powered by Google, always has been. Google paid a lot of money for it. It's one thing doing it for search when we know Google are the best at search, and search is search. Like, that's it. Like, there's not really much more in terms of a straight up search function. There's not much more innovation that could happen with search apart from AI. With so much development still happening with AI, and AI still being so nascent versus where it's going to end up in the next 1, 2, 5, 10 years, I just don't get why Apple would risk giving Google that kind of power because of how much data it gives. And also, was it mentioned that if Google were paying Apple for this? I didn't see anything about payment.
Billion?
Yeah, right, okay, it was, billion. Right, yeah. So Google will pay a lot of money for this. But Google gets so much more out of it because they get so much more data. There's like 1.5 billion iPhones or something in the world. Google gets so much data from being the kind of the back end power of Siri to help them build their AI, and instantly putting the likes of Anthropic and OpenAI on the back foot when they've could have been arguably on the front foot for so long. Certainly OpenAI have been. I'm fascinated by what that's going to do and why Apple have chosen to give Google this level of power, and also basically admit that we are really far behind on our own AI tech capabilities. Like, we're doing a really shit job, actually. Let's bring Google in.
Do you think they're behind the scenes trying to save some time and work on their own?
Maybe. Yeah. I mean, they must be trying to develop their own stuff, because I'd be flabbergasted if Apple weren't looking to do that, because I don't think they'd want Google powering it forever. Again, especially because it's moving so fast and like it's just giving Google more and more power. Do Apple want that? That's what I'm confused about. Do Apple want to give Google that amount of power? They obviously don't mind. But I think that they've said Google far and away kind of the best out there for what they need it for. I just feel it's a bit scary. But I'm terrified of life at the moment. So
yeah,
sure, why not? Why not?
Yeah, bring it on.
Yeah. Why not have Grok power it? Like, that's, yeah, even better.
Yeah, great.
Yeah.
Good suggestion.
It's an unusual one for sure.
Well, you know.
Yeah. anyway, at least if Sarah gets better, that will help to fall. And then I'll move on to our third story for the week. The battle for Warner Brothers Discovery has taken another twist. Paramount has sued Warner Brothers and its CEO, David Saffel. This follows Warner Brothers recommending its shareholders to reject Paramount's amended offer. The lawsuit filed in Delaware asked the court to call on Warner Brothers to provide information about its sale process and pending deal with Netflix so its shareholders are able to make an informed decision. In a letter shared with Warner Brothers shareholders, Paramount CEO Ellison stated, "Warner Brothers Discovery has failed to include any disclosure about how it values the global network stub equity, how it values the overall Netflix transaction, how the purchase price reduction for DEC works in the Netflix transaction, or even what the basis is for its risk adjustment, or for our $30 per share all cash offer."
Yeah. Interesting.
Lindsay.
Jumped off the page, isn't it?
Honestly, yes. What do you make of this latest saga?
Oh, God. I mean, I'm actually quite bored of it now, I think. This coupled with the fact that Trump has come out and said he does not want the Netflix deal to go through, he wants Paramount to be the winners here, makes you think, well, that's going to be the direction it goes in. And they've chosen a Delaware court because of the fact that they would tend to normally be quite open to increased disclosure to shareholders of what's going on. And so it feels like, you know, looking into it, like there's no evidence that Paramount are trying to actively block the deal. They're trying to block the deal through a back door rather than actively kind of go, we want this deal not to happen. They're trying to go to one of our shareholders and be like, guys, do you think you've got the best deal here? I think you're being hoodwinked. I think you should definitely query this and come away and like, and there's better options out there. They'll get you so much more money. And it's just whether that's going to, A, if that works and shareholders do start to revolt and go, actually, you know what, guys, you know what, Larry and Dave, you're right. Let's have another look at this. Or if they kind of go, no, we know, but actually we wanted Netflix anyway. But either way, it delays things further. It's just another delay to what is already becoming a really annoying story.
Yeah.
John, what are your thoughts?
When this news broke, I loved it. Like this is real life Succession to me. This is kind of imagining.
It is.
We expected that was going to happen anyway. Yeah. Maybe not to sue them, but yeah.
Yeah, we kind of imagined it would go on like this. But I started out being kind of, wasn't neutral in it. Like I was quite pleased that Netflix were the preferred bidder in the end. Like I like to see that shift in dynamic, and Netflix have been very, very good at what they've done for long enough to have kind of. It's amazing they're in the conversation. I really, you know, I like that side of the story.
It makes it more interesting.
Yeah, of course.
Yes, it makes the industry more interesting if that's what the outcome is.
Yeah. And, you know, we've discussed it and taken pains to say that this is no Cinderella story. Netflix are an incredibly huge company. There is no small fighty bidder here. Like, they're all big companies. But I really don't like the way the Paramount have gone about it. And, of course, I don't, because there's Daddy Donald sitting in the White House having his money, and the Ellisons, you know, like fluffing him away, and he's will make his rules and regulations regarding it. And I hate that side of it. I hate that you know, Netflix were the preferred bidder, and cool, that's how it, you know, should have played out. But yeah, there's now the intrigue. They're saying the higher numbers, like the Ellisons are demanding transparency on why their higher number wasn't accepted. They've been rebuffed twice now by the Warner Brothers shareholders, which is, you know, normally I think they'd have expected to go to shareholders with a much bigger offer of them to be wowed by them. But for some reason, there's like, no, we're still going to go with the Netflix deal.
And yeah, no means no, guys. No means no.
We don't want this. And you don't have to sell it to them. If, you know, if I decide to sell an apple to someone for £1 and someone offers me £2, I might still sell it for £1 because I like the previous bidder a little bit more. I don't like this side of business and the kind of political levering around it, which is to be expected with this much money and companies of this size and stature. So I'm rooting for Netflix. Fuck it.
Lindsay, do you think it's likely that Paramount might succeed in stopping this Netflix deal?
Yes.
Yes.
I do. No question. Yeah. Yeah. I think that's where it's going. It does feel a bit like the way that this is going is is becoming very political. And as John put it, Daddy Donald's involved, and that is never a good sign. And it feels like all these things that would have been like, listen, we're allowed to make our choice, and our choice is the end of it. And I'm allowed to kind of court other options and not go with the highest bid. I'd go with the one that I think is the best fit, and that is what it should be. Largely ties in quite well with other stuff happening in the US, which is the same thing, like things that we were long past able to kind of say no, and able to say this is my choice, is now like, it doesn't matter, like I'm saying this is what you've got to do, and you're gonna fucking do it. And that feels like very much the direction that things are going in. And so I don't think Netflix will come out well in this. And then I'm intrigued as to what that will do politically. The broader CTV market, the broader streaming market, will then sort of, you know, just look the way it's kind of looks. It's just another giant behemoth that looks the same. Paramount looks the same, et cetera, et cetera. But politically, what that will then do to how companies feel they can operate in the US market, that could cause changes. It could cause a lot more friction, and it could cause a lot more fear from other platforms like Netflix as to kind of, well, actually kind of, well, you know, what am I doing here? Like, what does this now mean for how I am able to run this business in this country, in this market, if this is how it's being treated? So I think it does raise a lot of questions. It will raise a lot of questions because the Netflix deal was not going through.
Yeah. And John, how much transparency do you think Warner Brothers, just Discovery, should be required to give a ranks valuation? And what precedent do you think this will set for future mega mergers?
Obviously, it's not my world, particularly that high level of like the billions of money purchases and stuff going in. So I don't know the ins and outs of what normally is required. I don't feel like particularly any, like they would have seen, it's private business. They've seen the internal documents. They've been given the bids. This is not like a public good being sold. This is private entertainment companies. So like Warner Brothers and Paramount asking for this is just making a point.
Yeah.
They are living in this world where they are saying, we have offered, is it 40 billion more? 80 billion versus 120 might be the figures. They've offered almost a third over.
Yeah, 82 billion versus 108.
So not quite, but still the fair whack.
A couple of other, yeah.
A fair whack over, yeah. And I think it's just like they are, it's a power flex basically to say, right, show us what's in the deal that you want and more than us. I don't think they should be entitled to saying that at all. I think it's the company's decision, company fit, person, like you said, you know, it might just like, they like what the outcomes will be more for the company. And I think if they are forced to reveal it by the powers that be, that sets the precedent that is ugly you know, for the future of business, because it just shows it's like, oh, well, we would have, there is no final sale basically until the person who the powers that be want to own it. So, yeah, I think it sets an ugly precedent for me, that.
Yeah, well, let's watch this space.
Yeah.
Anyway, I think we'll end it there for today. Thank you both so much for joining, John and Lindsay.
Thank you.
And that's it for the MadTech Podcast. Tune in next week.
You've been listening to the MadTech Podcast, brought to you by ExchangeWire.